Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson, and we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And today I'm joined by the brilliant Jambi McGrath. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm enjoying the weather, nice and hot.
Oh, I am very hot.
It can't be any hotter than Kenya, though. I mean, surely it's hotter there.
Well, actually, I'm from the central province of Kenya, which is basically has the perfect weather. The average weather is 25 degrees, and the coolest month is July, which is 17 degrees. And actually, people in the central province of Kenya, they think that that is too cold. So they generally don't tend to drink cold drinks. So, really? Because they think that's too cold. So when I took my husband for the first time, and we went to a bar, and they asked him, would you like warm beer or cold beer? And he was like, warm beer in this weather? And they were like, yes, in this weather. You don't want to drink anything too cold. You get a cold.
See, this is why I love doing this podcast, because I get to speak to people from all manner of places that have come from all manner of places. I wouldn't have known that. I didn't know that. I just assumed, right, it's all hot. And that's it.
Well, the thing is, even in like a country like Kenya, you have like Mombasa, the average temperature is 33 degrees because it's coastal. Wow. And it feels, when you get out of the plane, you can feel the heat. Mm. And so you know you're by the beach. But Nairobi is where I'm from. But it's really cool, actually. Nairobi is a very comfortable temperature. So good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Do you go back often?
Yeah, every year.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
If I can, I mean... It's Kenya is really expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Is it more difficult now to travel since the changes that have been made over here? Is there more paperwork involved now, or?
Well, I don't know. I'm a dual citizen, so I don't know.
You don't know? Yeah, you can just nip in and out, do what you like.
Well, the thing is, I think what people don't understand here in the UK is that they've made it more difficult for Europeans to come to Britain, but they've made it easier for Africans to come to the UK. Because they need our labor, you see. Like in Kenya, they are recruiting like insanely. You know, they're recruiting butchers, lorry drivers, nurses, everything, doctors, everything. So, and if you know anything about Kenya, majority of people are under the age of 30, very educated, highly qualified, and very eager to work.
Right, yeah.
So before Boris Johnson left office, he did a deal with Kenya to allow mass migration from Kenya. You can make this shit up.
Oh my god. And we're both comedians. We will never write something better than that. We will never.
No.
Never ever.
He basically heckled the country. Okay. He made it impossible for British people to trade with anybody else, but increase massively the numbers of people coming in. So it's difficult for Europeans, not that difficult for Africans who, you know, if you're buying a flight or whatever, So yeah, they're getting loads of people to come here from Africa, which is great. Africa.
That feels like it's kind of backfired on a few people.
Well, the thing is, he appealed to the people who, you know, who probably just thought, you know, we're going to have an immigrant-free utopia.
Yeah.
And then he was like doing dirty deals underneath, you know.
Oh,
he lied to everyone.
He really did. This is worth the entrance fee alone. I mean, we could just wrap the podcast up now. That would be it. That's amazing.
heckled by your own right-wing prime minister.
Well done, mate. Well done, Boris, you absolute dickhead. Well, that's pleased me no end. I'm well chuffed for that.
Yeah.
But all of this, you know, all these changes and things like that, this podcast is fundamentally about mental health. Mm-hmm. But it is just, we don't just sit and talk about mental health. We talk about things we've dealt with, things we're dealing with, and then from that, people will get whatever they want to get from it. And all these changes, these government people that are supposedly in charge put so much pressure on everybody because they're all dodgy. They talk about corruption in other countries. I think the UK is the most corrupt. It blows my mind.
Oh, seriously? No, I mean, I know probably more than most because Kenya being a British colony, I know what they did to us. Okay.
Mm.
I know, like in 1851, Winston Churchill basically helped write and draft the Human Rights Convention, which meant that as a human being, you're not allowed to be tortured. You're not allowed to be enslaved. So that was in 1951. Within months, they put under his guardianship, they put my whole tribe in concentration camps. You can make this shit up. Yeah. So my grandmother, when she was 8, in 1952, she, my grandmother and the whole tribe were put in concentration camps for 8 years. So they were released in 1960. So we know.
Wow. See, these are the
things.
You
didn't know this?
No, we don't get, I got taught the other side. I got taught growing up, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, we got taught, we were the good guys and we went around and we made everybody's lives better and we educated them and we did this and we did that and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's the side we got. And that's why now I'm finding, this is why I'm only finding out about this now, because up until now it was like, everybody needed our help. We go, no, they didn't. They were fine. They were doing better than we were.
Well, the thing is, the British say that they brought democracy to Kenya. So what they found were different tribes. Like my tribe, we had the purest form of democracy.
Mm.
Okay? Because what the structures that we had was that every family unit had to be represented in the village council. And the villages, they had to choose a representative to be represented in the district council. And the districts had to be represented in the provincial council. And anybody that was a wrong one, anybody that was greedy, anybody that was self-serving, any perverts, they were all kicked out of representation. And even when the British came, they were like, wow, you still have anybody left in parliament? So what they did was they came round and they found all the greedy bastards and they showered them with money and they made them chiefs. And that's basically, So basically they came, they found democracy, they took away the democracy and they imposed authoritarianism on us. And of course, when the British started ruling us, basically black people had no rights. So you could, that's a very weird form of democracy. Black people could not vote. Mm. Black people could not represent themselves. So you had to be represented by a missionary. So, so that's the kind of democracy they brought to Africa. Basically, you lost your land. So they took away, my grandmother, and how they lost their land is they would come at night and they would touch the whole village. And of course, you'd run out screaming. And that's how you were deported from your land. And that's how they gave the British people, the British settlers, that's how they gave them their land. So then they were all taken to native reserves. And in these native reserves, they had no access to food. They had no access to a method of earning anything. So they brought in the Red Cross to feed them. And that's where the images of poor Africans were born.
Wow. See, this blows my mind. Because of what I was told growing up, we trusted those stories. So we were like, the grown-ups are telling us these things, so it must be true.
Yeah.
And it's only now when we're really getting into it, we go, no.
Do you know, in 1952, when they actually took my whole tribe, over 1 million people, and they put them in concentration camps, a British engineer was asked to design a tool that could grab a man's testicles and rip them out in 1 second. And they did. That's how they castrated Kenyan men.
Oh, come on, man. Yeah, it's just... I mean, when take you talk- away the land, but don't take away his tackle. Come on.
It did.
Leave the man with something.
I know. Oh. Can you imagine that? You've lost your land and your balls. Yeah. It was gruesome.
How do you cope knowing this? Because I know it's in your family and it didn't necessarily happen to you, but you were you've been affected by what's happened.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that? How do you go about your day without wanting to just set fire to everything?
Okay, let me show you something. Let me just grab something.
Okay. I thought you were going to go and grab one of those tools. I was like, I've got one here. I'm like, all right, mate, we don't need to see it.
Yep, here's a pliers.
Yeah. So I just have them on the wall hanging up like a trophy.
Yeah, just, how do I cope? That's why I wrote this book, because I was so traumatized because that trauma is handed down from our parents. You know, like my dad used to beat us, and like he nearly killed each one of us. Could have died under the hands of my dad because they were so brutalized, you know. I mean, it was awful. They had the worst time ever. So they were living in these camps. They were on the verge of starvation. They were tortured and beaten and everything. And of course, once you're given our independence, so they were set free in 1960. We got our independence in 1963. So these people just released. They're traumatized and then they become parents. So you can just imagine what kind of parenting that you get. And as a child, you don't know. All you know is that, you know, it's shit. Okay. And then years later, when my dad died, I became very, very traumatized. And that's when I actually started researching my history, because they also don't teach us that. And it's not that long ago, in 1960, that's when my whole tribe were released from concentration camps. And the Kenyan children, because like half of Kenyan children are under the age of 18. So they don't know about that, because they don't teach that in schools. So people are very traumatized and they don't know and they don't understand why. So when I started doing research, I cried every single day for a year. Every single day. There wasn't a day I wasn't crying for a whole year. And actually, you know, you're talking about mental health. And I at one point in my life, I thought that I couldn't carry on living with what was in my head.
See, I try to see the best in everybody. But so when I hear about atrocities like this.
Yeah.
I can't get my head around it. I can't understand how a person could do something so horrific to another person.
Yeah.
Let alone a whole tribe.
Yeah.
Let alone just one day just gathered everybody up and went, right, you're in here now.
Well,
and under some sort of trumped up charges.
Okay. Here's the scenario. So I told you I'm from the central province of Kenya. So in 1902, when Sir Charles Elliot was sent to Kenya to evaluate the land for occupation by the British. So he went around the country and he came to the central province of Kenya and he said the temperature is perfect. The land is so fertile. He said it's easily the most fertile land on earth and therefore perfect for the British. And he said that the Africans lacked in each and every way and therefore they did not belong on this land. And so that is how basically our fate was decided. And so they came, when they arrived, so they actually put adverts in London telling British people who want to come and settle in Kenya, there's free land and free labor. So they came. They came for the free land and free labor. And why wouldn't you?
And so
because the land had already been cleared and all my, you know, my grandma, all of them, they were all now in native reserves. And the British then came, they would just be given vast lands, like huge lands. And so basically, but you see the thing, us, the Gikuyu people that were farmers in that land, where were we to go? Where do you go? Because the terrain of Kenya is actually very difficult because we have semi-desert. And so the people who we are Bantu, And Bantus, especially my tribe, the Gikuyu people, we were almost vegan. And because of this, we can't live like the Maasai. See, the Maasai, you know, from time immemorial, have been nomadic. And so they have, they know how to survive in dry lands because they drink milk and they drink blood. That is how they survive.
Oh, wow.
The Gikuyu people, we are almost entirely vegan. So we couldn't live like that. And so no. The only thing that we could do was try and get back to our lands. But the problem is the white people have already taken our lands. But the Gikuyu people wouldn't stop wanting their lands. And so what they did was they started creating resistance. So they started forming groups for resistance. And they tried to petition the British government. The British government ignored them. They said, you don't have a voice. Shush. You can't. You're not allowed to represent yourself. You don't have grievances. So you shut up. Okay.
Yeah.
So the only thing they could do was eventually become violent. So they started sabotaging the farmers, the white farmers. And they would turn up and burn the farmer's house. So in that period, 32 white farmers were killed. In retaliation, the British government and Winston Churchill got the whole tribe to be punished, so collective punishment. So we were all put into concentration camps.
And all they were doing was defending themselves.
Oh, they wanted, and actually, if they had been given just a little bit of land to grow food to eat, they would have. The British would still have been in Kenya. But they refused to listen. They were like, no, you're not, we don't want to hear you. You don't have a voice now. Go away, okay? And so that's why they became violent. And, you know, so it culminated with the Kenya being declared a police state. In 1952, Kenya was put in under state of emergency. And they brought in 34,000 soldiers. 50,000 tons of bombs were dropped on us.
What?
And so many, 32 white farmers were killed as a result of that. Possibly 300,000 Kenyans, Gikuyu people were killed. We don't know how many because nobody was keeping tally. And that's basically eventually how we got our independence because it became impossible to, the news was starting to get out. And Labour MP, Barbara Castle, she went to visit Kenya and she found, what the hell? We've actually got concentration camps in Kenya in the 50s. Wow. Yeah.
As recent as the 50s.
Yeah, and she made a speech, and also because the mothers were writing, a lot of letters to the Queen, begging the Queen to stop their children from being raped. So they wrote so many letters, copious amount of letters, and the government said the letters were embarrassing the British government. So eventually, that's how we got our independence.
Oh my God. See, I know this is out there. I know this information is out there, but because I was just told a certain thing, I was like, oh, it was that. I just kind of went with it. It's only since doing this podcast that I'm starting to learn that actually, we've got some making up to do, some reparations to make. We've just been barreling around the world, just taking whatever we want, which is why I think this is why we're in such a mess in the UK now.
Yeah.
Because the blood of those people, their ancestors, is in the blood of them now. So that's why they don't give a shit. They don't give a fuck about their own people, let alone people outside of the UK.
Well, this is it. This is what they're doing to the British people now is what they've done to people around the world. They don't care. Since 2010, you've seen how poverty has actually been introduced, extreme poverty. I know there are mothers here that are stealing formula milk for their babies. You know, imagine that. Imagine
You're right. I heard this on the news the other day, and they were saying that they're now putting alarms and things on the baby formula, and they were talking. It was, I can't remember who the interviewer was. But the person interviewing was saying, he was saying, but is it, you know, because these things are being stolen and sold on to pay for drugs and things like that. No, it's for survival.
If you were going to steal something to sell to buy drugs, would you go for baby formula?
You know, no, of course not.
People would probably steal watches and, you know, everyday things.
Yeah.
Unless there's something that we know about baby formula that people have started just drinking it.
Maybe there is, if you drink enough of it, it sends you a bit off your head. But yeah, he was saying that the guy was going, no, it isn't. This isn't funding criminal activities. Desperate people.
Yeah, the two things that are being stolen is formula milk and Calpol.
Really?
Yeah.
See, it shouldn't. This is, and it still blows my mind that these people are, they're still voted in. They still vote for them.
Yep.
But what's happening now? I did a gig. Quite a middle class area the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I made a joke and just said, like, you know, so who's shoplifting now then? And loads of people said, yeah, loads of people. And I went, so I said, what are we doing? Are we helping ourselves to the bread? What are we doing? Nicking bread? And they all kind of went weird. People are stealing bread. Yeah. And that's not, that's not working class people. This is the middle classes.
So imagine if they can do that to actual British people. Then imagine what they would do to people who are, you know, black in Africa, in a place where they will never be accountable. Imagine what they would do there.
It just makes me, I mean, sad doesn't even cover it. It's shame. I feel shame that's happened. And shame that we weren't told that. We were told that you needed educating and we showed you about, like we gave you democracy. These people, like you've said already, most of these people speak more than one language.
Yeah.
They're already better than you.
We are all trilingual. Most of us are trilingual.
The UK, we barely speak English. We can't even do that properly.
But you know what? It is one thing that the British and Europeans in general are very, very good at is propaganda. So you can do all of that and come and tell your people, oh, you know, we were just civilizing them, you know. It's like America saying they dropped their atomic bomb on Japan to keep them warm. It's like, you know, we were helping them with the heating, you know.
It was a bit chilly. We just thought we'd just do the whole lot.
Yeah.
But you said that, you know, you wrote the book to kind of just get, I guess, to just get those thoughts and feelings out of you. Did it help? Do you feel, did it get you out the other side? Are you in a better place now or are you still?
You know, it's one of those things I began to regret doing the research because like you, we were taught the same. Like, Kenyans are very brainwashed. We are very brainwashed to believe that white people are nice, to believe that white people came and gave us stuff, to believe all this about white people. And so when I found, and I totally fundamentally believed it with my whole heart, we were told that white people are the purveyors of justice. White people are the purveyors of anything that's good and wholesome. So for us, I completely and fundamentally believe that. And then I'm talking to my mother when I'm doing the research for my book. And the things that she is recounting, I think my mother is lying. And I can't believe it. So I go to the library and start getting books out. And then I subscribe to like Yale University to allow, so that they can give me access to their database. And I start researching. And the one thing that really chilled me to the bone was I saw in a military, document that said the Agikoyo people of Kenya do not know and will never realize just how close they came to complete and total annihilation. And that chilled me to the bone. And everything that my mother said was collaborated by the work of Caroline Elkins. So she wrote a book. It's called Britain's Gulags in Kenya. And then there's another book that was written by David Anderson, and it's called The Histories of the Hanged, because one thing the British introduced in Kenya is hanging. So from 1952 to 1960, they even had mobile gallows and they used to hang people. Yeah. So they used to hang people like, you know, in Iran, how they hang people in a crowd. So they gather around a crowd. So they would do that. And I write about this in my book, how my mother, why my mother didn't go to school. It's because her first week in school, the district officer came to their school and, you know, she was very small and he comes and he speaks to their teacher and the teacher tells them, children, we're going on a trip, you know, and imagine you tell 5-year-olds, they're going on a trip, how excited they are. So they're jumping up and down. They're so excited. They think they're going somewhere nice. And then they get to the town square. And in the town square, the district officer uncovers something that was covered on the floor. And basically, there were mutilated heads and charred bodies of people. And they showed them to the children. And they said, "If you do you see these people, next is going to be your mothers and your grandmothers and your fathers. This is why they must not join the Mau Mau terrorists, you know, the rebels." And so from that day, my mother never went back to school. My grandmother could not send her back to school again. And so there were children were encouraged to go and watch people being hanged and people being tortured so that they could instill the fear in them so that they could beg their families not to fight for independence.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's horrific. This was in the 60s.
Yeah. I mean, this is... I mean, I was born in 1972, so Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, and I thought it was bad enough where I grew up, but we just had to worry about at some point a grown-up would just punch you in the ear off.
Yeah.
Wow. How... You'll never get over that.
I wrote, the reason I wrote my book is because I thought to myself that if I ever fuck up my children, at least they have a point of reference. They can read my book and hopefully understand where I'm coming from. We are so traumatized. Yeah. People in Africa are so traumatized and we don't actually even know why.
No.
And you know what? I mean, the British... They're all in cahoots. They're German. They're all in cahoots because that's what the Germans did to people in Namibia. You know, the Germans in Namibia, they would actually get you to kill your mother and then boil her head so they can take the skull away, so that they can do tests on the skull to see whether black people are inferior. The Belgians did the same in the Congo. King Leopold II, he killed half of the population in 7 years. So he killed 10 million people in the Congo. And what he would do to motivate Africans to work is either he would, you know, you'd be having your gorgeous little baby and they would take your baby and chop off its hands and its feet to make you work harder so that the rest of your children can keep their hands and feet. Europeans are easily the most grotesque, violent people in the world. The things that they have done to us Africans is unfathomable. Now the way they watch Africans fleeing, drowning in the Med with almost some kind of... that's nothing. And the thing is, people in Africa, they don't know the history, and therefore people, they genuinely believe that if they take those risky journeys, Europeans will save them because they have been so brainwashed to think that Europeans are but the purveyors of justice. And so, and this is why they are trying to reach Europe so that Europeans, the purveyors of justice, can help them. They don't understand, like in the Congo, it's destabilized by all the mining companies who come with their own militia and cause all of this and cause terror and mayhem. And so they think if we flee to Europe, the Europeans would hear us and they will help us. It fucks you up.
Fuck. Wow. That just makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
Because the amount of conversations I've had with people that are, you know, close to me, and they're like, oh, yeah, the problems we're having is... They're getting brainwashed, like you said. Mm. The thing that the UK government's really good at is propaganda.
They're good at propaganda.
Yeah. They've got people here genuinely believing that the issue is... because of the people coming here in boats.
Well, the thing is, for example, look at the war in Sudan. Look at the war in Sudan. What do you think is causing the war in Sudan?
I don't know. I think it just goes back to being... It's the same the world over. It's the people in power barreling around the world, causing all the problems, and then blaming the people from those... The people just going about their daily business, blaming it on them.
If you see the division that was that was created in Sudan, it basically began when the British decided that they are going to separate. It's similar to India and Pakistan. They decided that the north of Sudan was going to be Islamist. They're going to turn it into an Islam state. Right. And the people in the south, because they were dark skin, they were going to obviously make that a different type of people. So they encouraged the people, like they built a lot of mosques in the north of Sudan. And then the north of Sudan, so they got they encouraged the light-skinned Arabs in the north of Sudan. And they actually showered them with money, and they built mosques and schools. And, so the north of Sudan is really good. And what they did was they held back the dark Africans, what they call the sub-Saharan Africans in the South Sudan. They basically made their lives quite miserable, and they put the Arabs in charge of them. And so what you have is a perfect recipe for all these people who have been oppressed to basically fight back. And this is why South Sudan broke away from the North, because they have been very racist towards them. And so these problems were laid down a long time ago. It's like Kashmir. It's exactly the same as Kashmir, the same as Rwanda. So in Rwanda, honestly speaking, when the Belgians took over from the French in the Belgium, they found that the Hutus and Tutsis were the same. There was no difference between them. And so what they did was they measured their noses, they measured their faces, and they checked the color of their skin. So anybody that had a longer nose, anybody that had a long face, and anybody that was light-skinned, they were made to be the Tutsis. And the Hutus were the shorter, broad-nosed people who were dark-skinned. So they made the light-skinned people, they gave them loads of money, and they got them to oppress the dark-skinned people. And so the dark-skinned people, this is how... I mean, there isn't a place in Africa that hasn't been completely and utterly, can I say fucked in this podcast?
Yeah, fucked. Yeah, I think that's
that
exactly
haven't been completely fucked by Europeans, not only by taking them as slavery. I mean, the Portuguese in Africa, my God. Mm. Like, if you look at places like Mozambique, my God, those people... And Angola, the Portuguese took nearly 5 million Africans from there as slaves, and half of them they threw overboard.
What?
In transit to Brazil. And those people are still suffering. You know, the blood that has been spilled of Africans, and still Europeans portray us as poor, diseased, helpless people.
We
managed to kick Europeans out of Africa. We did it. We kicked Europeans out of Africa, and they can never, ever let us get away with it. And this is why they mistreat Haiti. You see, Haiti is so poor and whatever. It's because the Haitians, the slaves, they were slaves, and they fought for everything they've got. And so, and the French are such bastards that they made them pay for their freedom. And it took them several hundred years to finish paying the French for their freedom. And all the Western countries are in cahoots to keep Haiti poor because of fighting them for their independence from slavery.
After they have these natural disasters, and you go, why aren't you just helping? We need to put these things in place first, and we need to make... And you're like, go and fucking help them.
And all the money that was collected. Yeah, and the money that was collected, none of that money went to Haiti. And actually, the peacekeepers who were there actually caused more problems than not. The global politics, the more you learn about global politics, the less you want to be alive. Seriously, it depresses
this,
me.
Because I'm not an educated man. I mean, I'm not stupid, but I'm not an educated man. I'm not well read. And so when it comes to, I kind of trusted, like I said, I trusted the grown-ups when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to realise that it was all bullshit.
Yeah.
Then you get to a point where you go, oh, I'm not going to watch the news anymore because it's just depressing.
Yeah.
But then on the news, they only tell you what they want you to know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's only when I talk to people that, like you, and people that are actually involved in these things, that you start to get a better picture of it. It's like my dad was a civil servant, and he worked in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of times my dad says, it's like, look, that the EU wasn't a shit thing to be involved with. He goes, that's why we've got sewage being pumped into our rivers now, because we had the thing was that was keeping the shit from the rivers, and now they've got rid of it. We're out of it. They can do what they want.
You got and freedom. So again, the people that got freedom.
Yeah,
we're
and we're going to make you fucking pay for it.
Yeah, the people that got freedom was the government.
But that was what it was. This everything in the world is always traced back to the same thing. It's just money and power, isn't it? It's just
money and power.
Money and power, and that's it across the board. Mm. It all comes back to money and power. Mm-hmm. And it really saddens me that people that are in genuine need are just never going to be helped. And like, you know, people coming over here on, see, that makes so when you said that, you've clarified that, why? Because you go, it's so dangerous to try and get here on a boat, or you're paying these gangsters to, you trusting these gangsters, you're paying them fortunes to get you to a safer place. And you go, and you have to say, like, well, why would you do that? Why don't you just not do it? And you go, well, now it makes sense, because there's no other option. They genuinely thought they were going to get help if they came
and you
here.
Know what? You know, have you ever heard of the abuse becomes the abuser? So, like, if you look at what they did in the Congo, because that's how, like, Leopold introduced the chopping off of hands and stuff, and then the militia started doing it to people. So, I mean, it's horrifying, some of these places. And you will do, if you can, you will pay those people to carry, those people are actually providing a service for people. You know, they are providing a service. They're helping you flee. It's like, I mean, when the war started in Ukraine, you saw people trying to flee, and you saw, you know, what they did to black people. They stopped them from fleeing. So if you can, you would pay someone to help you flee. So these people are just providing a service, you know. That's what they're doing. And the thing is, the reason they blame the immigrants or these people in boats is because they cannot tell you the truth about all the shit they have caused around the world. And they say, no, it's these people. It's these people. They're crossing illegally. It's like, where are they coming from? What has made them flee? What has made their land? Because you know what? People need to understand that actually majority of people around the world would rather not move continents. Majority of people around the world would rather just live where they have lived. Okay? Because, like, people look at people in Africa and they think, oh, they're so poor or whatever. That's how, for us, the one thing that the colonizers could never, ever understand for a very long time was how little Africans were interested in capital wealth. The Africans were just happy living simple lives. They were like, listen, we've got everything we want, okay? So here's our schedule. Our schedule is this. In this month, women will go and do their planting. And as they're planting, they're singing and whatever, they're having joy. And then they come after they've planted. Now is the time for ceremonies and dance competitions. So people from all the other districts, they would all be, you know, doing their dancing competition, whatever, and then they would hold district festivals for dancing competitions. And then when that was finished, they would harvest, and then after that, it was the wedding ceremonies. So it'd be weddings and weddings and wedding ceremonies. So that was the life. The Europeans came, and they saw them living in mud huts. And for us, everybody was the same, okay? Nobody was superior or whatever. Everybody was the same. These people's quality of life was actually very good, wholesome and very good. The Europeans tried to show them things and they were like, but we don't want that. We are happy with what we're doing. And they worked so hard. And this is why one of the reasons why they made Africans so desperately poor, so that the only way they can survive is by working for the white settlers. And the white settlers exploited them by giving them, like, just enough to eat and survive to keep working for them.
My God.
If Europeans had not ever been to Africa, I doubt any African would ever try to come to Europe. And like I say...
No, why would you? Why would you?
Yeah, and like I say, if you don't want people in Africa coming to your continent, leave Africa alone. Simple.
There's a comedian, Tommy Tiernan, who said he used to have a bit about, you know, the Brits would, you know, travel around the world, invading different countries, and then getting the ump when those people would follow them home.
Yeah, I know. This is it. This is exactly it. You know, and like I say, if you hadn't gone on and on and on and on and on about how great Britain was, I would still be in Africa chasing an animal. You know,
and having this, a better time.
I know. Seriously, you know what? You know what they do. It's like you go and light a fire and then you come outside and call people, look, a fire. Oh, my God, a fire. Shall we go and rescue those people? It's like you're the one that actually caused that fire.
Yeah.
And this is literally what they do. This is what they do. To answer your question, I wish I had not found out a lot of that stuff, because sometimes being innocent is good for you. You know, not knowing all this shit is so much better for your mental health. And I was so negative for a very long time. But you just have to learn to cope, you know. Finding out the things that were done to my family makes me extremely sad.
I think this is why a lot of people, myself included, this is why a lot of us just, you bury your head in the sand, you go, I don't need to know about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to make me upset, but we have to know about these things in order to stop these things happening again.
Yeah. And this is why in America they're stopping people from being taught about Black history, because their children are feeling too guilty.
Which is tough shit, unfortunately.
I know. It's tough shit.
We're going to have to, America's turned into proper Disneyland, isn't it? I mean, it's taking away the rights of women to do what, so a woman has the choice to do what she wants to do with her own body.
But even in this country, two days ago, a woman was sent to prison for having an abortion. Did you see that? 2 days ago.
I briefly saw a headline, but I didn't really take much notice.
In this country, abortion is illegal. Okay? It's illegal. So a mother of three is now serving time for having an abortion in the United Kingdom in 2023.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's illegal. And this is a law based in a law from 1861 that made abortion illegal in this country.
Fuck's sake. It's easy to think that there's no hope, isn't there? When things get like this, because like I've just said, now it's affecting everybody. It's not just affecting working class people, it's affecting everybody. And this is how things start to, this is when things start to change and people start to rise up. But
of course, it's like a forest fire. It's like a forest fire. A forest fire burns everything, and then from it, new fresh growth. And sometimes things have to get so bad. I mean, you know what? Throughout history, you've seen this, you know, the Ottoman Empire. How do you build an empire? Through grotesque violence. And then these empires crumble. And then maybe some sort of stability comes about. And then the next fascists start to creep up. And, you know, this is it. But basically, people are voting for Brexit, thinking that they were going to live in a utopia where there was going to be no immigrants. It was just going to be white people. But it's because people don't really know their history. They could not see that they wanted to be in a state where they can be free from anything, and they can do so. Britain is Britain's last colony, basically.
It's true that, but that's the thing. They're all, you know, with Brexit, you know that they were like, right, we need to get out of Europe so we can, because we've got all this money stored away, or whatever reason it was always to do with money.
Yeah.
And they were like, right, what we're going to do, we're going to manipulate the people to make them think like they're voting for so it's on them, so that we don't even get the blame for it. The government don't even get the blame for it. The people get the blame for it for voting for it.
Do you know what? Like, I was seeing people rejoicing about getting rid of the human rights law. And I was like, do you think the law is going to say we can torture immigrants, Muslims, Black people? And this affects everybody. Okay.
Yeah.
So please, we have a saying that when you do bad, you do yourself bad. People were actually voting for this because they didn't want immigrants in this country. They didn't want the safety of immigrants that they didn't want, you know. And then now, they're the ones who cannot afford a mortgage. They're the ones who cannot eat tomatoes, you know. They're the ones who will not be able to get care in an NHS hospital. They're the ones who basically have lost their rights to protest. They're the ones who's, you know, they've lost everything. And they lost everything thinking that it is the black people or the Indian people or the Muslims that were going to suffer. And this is how sometimes you need to change your mind. Okay, if this thing hurts a Muslim, if this thing hurts an Indian, if this thing hurts a Chinese man, it could possibly hurt me as well, you know?
Yeah, you're not exempt from this.
Yeah, you know, it will hurt you as well, you know?
Yeah.
But I suppose people have to learn.
Well, this is it. People, they just believed it. They were so easily manipulated, and they believed it hook, line, and sinker. And now they're seeing it. Now they're seeing what's going on. They're going, oh shit!
They're
like, hang on a minute, that's not.
They lied to us.
I can't go and live in my house in Spain anymore. No.
Because you voted to leave.
You voted for it. Yeah.
I mean, it was so nice. Like, literally, you could wake up in the morning and think, I want to go to Paris and I'm going to work in Paris for a year and then I'm going to come back. No, you can't. And I was so baffled by this. I had loads of arguments with people. I was trying to say to people, this is not a good thing. They were like, no, this is a good thing. You know, it's going to control immigrants. We are an island. The thing is, the population growth in Britain has been stagnant for a very long time. In the 1950s, what was the population in Britain? About 63 million. Was the population in Britain now? About 66 million. So that's a very short climb. Whereas you see places in Kenya. In Kenya, we basically have, in the 1980s, we had 25 million people in Kenya. Now we have 55 million people in Kenya, double.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. In Britain, you've only had an increase of about maybe several million, maybe 4 million or 5 million in so many years. But you're still told Britain is full. But it's not full because we know that there are schools that are closing because of lack of children. There are whole towns in Britain that are dying because there is no people to work there. Majority, if you look at the population structure in Britain, is top heavy. So it's like this. So you have very, very many very old people and you have very few young people. Whereas in Africa, it's like this. Majority are young. Three quarters are under the age of 30. Yeah. It's like this. So we have a really big, healthy population. And this is worrying people because they say, oh, you know, this population growth in Africa is worrying. Why? Because they know that basically those are workers. Those are workers. Yeah. And Africa is going to be, you know, look at China. China just rose. India just rose. Africa is going to just rise. And people are like, oh, shit, we don't want, you know. And this is why you see there's, you know, and because we are different trajectories, Europe is going down and Africa is rising. And people cannot see that. Both people in Europe and both people in Africa cannot see that themselves. Obviously, the leaders know this. They have known this. I mean, places like Italy, bloody hell. Spain, bloody hell.
Yeah. But that's it. The leaders do know. The leaders
Of course they know.
Yeah. But it's the people, the people on the ground that are just paying the price.
Yeah, well, yeah. And they don't want to admit to people that the country has no money anymore because the money, where did the money come from? From the colonies. That's where you got all the money. And the colonies went that door shut and therefore you've got no more money. People don't want to admit this. So we've been told, no, it's those people coming on boats that are stealing your money.
Yeah, I know. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's absurd. Is a Syrian mother stealing your money?
But it's yes, and now this whole conversation has just blown my mind. I know I keep saying that because I don't know what else to say. I had no idea about any of this because I did that thing that we all do, and I didn't investigate. And I was like, oh well. I know bad things happened, but I'm not going to look at it because it'll upset me.
Yeah.
And it.
Sorry.
Yeah. And that's. No. It's given me a whole new perspective, and I'm glad that we did that. You know. Mm-hmm. But away from all that, like, are you yourself? Are you in a better place now?
I am in a great place. I'm in a great place because it actually gave me my voice, you know? I talk about this. It's made me so passionate about talking about the stuff that happened to my mother. She had no voice. My mother passed away without, but she passed on her voice to me. It's, my mother lives in my book. It's given me a purpose because I talk about this stuff in my shows. I talk about this stuff in my radio series. So I've just finished recording my radio series. I've got a new book coming out on the 5th of October. So that's my debut fiction. I've got a brand new show taken to Edinburgh Festival. So all this, and now I'm actually researching. I'm researching for a new book. And this is about, I've become very fascinated by my tribe, the Agikoyo people. Mm. So like my great grandmother, I thought she had four wives. Okay. I found out she had seven wives. She had seven wives.
What?
And my great great grandmother, she had seven wives and she was so revered. They've got a place named after her. So I'm researching her. Yeah. And she was a ruler as well. Yeah. So she ascended all the way to the she was a ruler. Because, you know, when people think about Africans, they think that we're very close-minded and whatever. We were actually a lot more liberal and, you know, it's colonialism. Yeah. And actually because we are matriarchy, matrilineal. So I'm so fascinated about my tribe and how we approach things and stuff like that. So, it's kept me very busy because I do a lot of research, I do a lot of writing.
Yeah.
And so that has given me stuff. I've got so much stuff to say.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Seven wives, though.
I know. She died of exhaustion.
What a way to go.
I know. So she had seven wives.
Well, that's what an incredible woman. Mm-hmm. And that is a beautiful way to finish. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for this today. Honestly, I have so much to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be getting the book you've got there. New book, when is your new book coming out?
On the 5th of October, my debut fiction is coming out and I'm very, very excited.
Excellent.
Yeah, I can't wait. You know, because when you write a memoir, it's different because the information is there. When you write fiction, you have to create a world. And that was...
Of course.
Yeah. So that was... It feels like giving birth all over again.
and you're doing a show and you're taking that to Edinburgh.
Yes. So I'll be at the Gilded Balloon.
Do you have dates for that?
So nice. I'll be at the Gilded Balloon from the 3rd until the 28th, but I'm not performing on the 14th. And I will be at Gilded Balloon, the Turret, at 3 p.m. every single day except the 14th.
Excellent. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect time. And where can we find you on the socials?
So I'm everywhere, really. I'm on Instagram, Jambi McGrath. I'm on TikTok, Jambi McGrath. I'm on YouTube, Jambi McGrath. On Facebook, Jambi McGrath Comedy. I'm everywhere. But please, guys, listen to my Radio 4 series. I've got a Radio 4 series. So the first series is called Who Am I? And Becoming Jambi McGrath. So kind of the journey of where I am now through my research and stuff. And then my second series, we just finished recording it. It's actually coming out in October. So everything is coming out in October. And And I've got several comedy specials. I've got five comedy specials. They can be accessed from Nexa platform or YouTube movies or Just for Laughs or Comedy Dynamics or Amazon Prime.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And are you okay? Because that was a heavy conversation. Are you all right?
I am fine. I'm fine. Yeah. I am fine. Okay, I hope you're okay processing all of this.
it's a lot to process, but I just want to make sure, because it's in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't want you to... It's a tricky way to start your day.
Yeah, it's a tricky one to start your day. You know, you know what? I'm absolutely fine. And like my husband says, you know, will you ever tire of talking about colonialism? And I'm like, yeah, my husband is English, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you're not this again. Oh, yeah, no, I get it.
Not colonialism again, Jambi, please. Can we at least just finish having sex? Okay. Yeah. So.
Good. But you're okay.
I'm fine. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining me, Jambi. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Insane in the Membrane. I've been Rich Wilson. This has been Jambi McGrath, and we'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.